Blog Talk Radio.
Turnbuckle Turmoil fans, QT and Sign Guy with you here on another Sunday afternoon. Real quick before we jump into things, if you're looking for wrestling today, you have LWP in Los Angeles, California, Galley Lucha Libre in Villa Park, Illinois, KDW in Jeffersonville, Indiana, XICW in Clinton Town, Michigan, SCW in Kiln, Mississippi, FSPW in Greensboro, North Carolina, MVW in Jacksonville, North Carolina, the NWA in Marion, Ohio, PCW in Toledo, Ohio, SPW in Oshawa, Ontario, and SSW up in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and like usual on a Sunday, NWA Blue Collar in Portland, Oregon. Without further ado, I would like to welcome to the show our guest today, his first time with us, Joe Rules. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Sign Guy.
Since it is your first time with us, you get the traditional first-timer's question to start. What led to you getting into the business of pro wrestling?
Oh, wow. Well, I started watching wrestling back in 1984. I was about 11 years old. Was a fan for a long time, and once I was in high school, I started backyard wrestling, which really isn't the best way to start your involvement, but in any event, that's how I started. But I did get proper training. I went to the East Coast Extreme Championship Wrestling, and I went to their school. I was on ring crew with them for a few years, and then I started branching out into the independent scene.
Now, ECW, of course, a major company in the 1990s. They were nationally recognized in Pro Wrestling Illustrated, had Sports Channel America lined up. What was it like getting your start through their training school?
It was interesting. The thing with ECW, well, while you were there, you didn't realize how big it really was. And, you know, looking back, it was a really amazing experience.
Now, they were always well-renowned as far as training goes. They had guys like Taz and guys like Tommy Dreamer, the Dudley Boys that would help lead the school. Who were some of the people there when you were going through that were running the training at that point?
Well, ECW actually had two schools. The more famous one that produced guys like Chris Chetty and Roadkill, that was based in New York. The original ECW school where I trained at was actually in the ECW arena in the back. And I was trained by J.T. Smith. He was the head trainer and had a lot of help from the Blue Meanie as well as and Dino Sendoff.
One of the things that you were noted for early in your career, of course, is you became Mr. 500. You were the 500th ranked wrestler in the 1997 PWI 500. It was still a huge deal 1997 to be ranked anywhere in the 500, especially the 500th guy got a lot of attention. What did it mean for you personally when you got the news that you were, in fact, 500 ranked that year?
That was something else, because when I was a fan, I used to get the PWI 500. I actually subscribed to the magazine, so I would get the PWI 500 every year, and I would always say, well, one day I'm going to be on this list. And then eventually I was. I'll never forget the way I found out. I was at Pennsylvania Championship Wrestling, and the promoter just came up to me, Blaine DeSantis. He had this big smile on his face, put his hand on my shoulder, and I'm like, well, what are you smiling about? You're making me nervous here. And then he showed me the magazine. So I was in the PWI 500 three more times after that for the next 3 years.
And once you get on that list, even ranked 500 like you were, what did that mean as far as your individual career? Did you notice any changes as far as bookings or pay or anything of that nature?
So I didn't really get much more pay, but I did get wheedle a few extra bookings out of it. Back at the time, like you said, the PWI 500 was a big deal. You know, not as much anymore, just because wrestling magazines in general just aren't as important in the business these days, which is unfortunate because I've always enjoyed them.
Absolutely. A lot of wrestlers still take it seriously. I've been getting inquiries from guys all over the Northwest wanting to know when the application process starts, actually. So it still means a lot to a lot of people out here. Now, another thing that got you quite a bit of notoriety was a few years ago, there was a tweet from CM Punk suggesting that Zack Ryder should wrestle you. When that went down, what did you see as far as your own career happening? Did you get a lot of extra bookings out of this? Did people take things a little more seriously when looking to book you? How did that affect your career?
Well, by that point, my career was pretty much winding down. I was pretty much just working exclusively with the UWC those days. And the funny thing is, I didn't even know about CM Punk's tweet until like a month or two later when a friend of mine, Sal DeMarco, he messaged me a screenshot of the tweet. And I'm like, well, what the hell is this? And it's CM Punk. So I go and look it up. And then I found out what the context of it was, where basically what it was, Zack Ryder sent out a tweet that he should wrestle the winner of the CM Punk versus John Cena match that was going to be on the 1,000th episode of Raw. And CM Punk answered him and said, you should wrestle Joe Rules. So it's not like it was like this huge endorsement of me, but I did get some mileage out of it. I got T-shirts printed up that said, you should wrestle Joe Rules. I started using it as a little catchphrase, and I had fun with it.
Alan, you were in locker rooms at this point, having gotten that tweet, and you've been in the PWI 500. You've been on Jerry Springer. You've had a lot of bigger things happening to you. Do you notice any change as far as the people in the locker room? Are they coming to you for advice more often? Are they looking to you as a locker room leader?
Well, what I find is that like I said, I'm working exclusively with the United Wrestling Coalition. I'm actually their booker these days, and I put the shows together. The guys ask me for advice, and I try to be more of a help than a hindrance whenever I can. And hopefully some of the guys can get really far in the business.
You mentioned being the booker there at UWC. When you started out your career, did you see at that point in time a day when you would want to get into the booking and or promoting end of the business? Were you not really looking that far ahead at that point?
Well, early on, I always thought I would be wrestling until the day I finally keeled over, but eventually I found that my body just wasn't really going to take much more of it, so I decided to do less and less. But I've always enjoyed the booking aspect of it, the behind the scenes, and I tried to get into more and more of that as time went on.
Now, a lot of bookers have a specific booking philosophy that they utilize when booking a company. Did you have any particular philosophy in the booking when you started out, or was it kind of a trial by error with you?
With me, I try to make everything make sense, which isn't always possible because sometimes you can plan this, come up with this great idea, and then the day before the show, you get the message, oh, yeah, I can't be there tomorrow. And then you have to throw everything out and start from scratch. But I try to be very old school in my approach. I try to, it's a very family-friendly promotion, and just try to make sense and keep the fans happy, or irritate them, as the case may be.
One of the things that a lot of promoters differ on as far as how they promote their shows is an aspect of comedy in wrestling. Some promoters have very, very little comedy on their shows anymore. Some promoters like a lot of comedy in their matches. Where do you stand as far as comedy matches go on shows?
Well, it depends on what the comedy is and who's doing it. I've done comedy myself, and the worst thing that can happen in wrestling is when the comedy doesn't go over, and the fans are just looking at you, and you hear crickets chirping. Nothing worse than that. But I think there's a place for it. I think there's a good mixture. You know, I don't go for the really farcical comedy. You know, some people really like that, but a good comedy spot is something that can also be believable, something that can that you could see happening. I don't personally care for comedy spots that require it to be choreographed.
One of the more controversial things in wrestling the last year or so has been intergender wrestling. There was an incident in New York where the Athletic Commission temporarily put a stop to a show because they were about to have an intergender match. It was found that there were no actual rules against it on the book, so it was allowed to continue, but it sparked a bit of a controversy in wrestling on both sides of that equation. Where do you stand on the intergender aspect of wrestling?
Well, once again, that depends on who's involved in it. Like, I've done plenty of intergender matches myself over the years. Now, but that comes in with the comedy aspects that I've always done. But in general, I try to avoid it, but the funny thing is, in the UWC right now, I would say our most popular wrestler, probably by far, is a woman, Daisy, Crazy Daisy, and she's one of our top people, and she's in a major feud with Textbook Philly Madison. They've been going at it for close to a year now, and it doesn't show any signs of stopping anytime soon.
Now, one of the aspects that a lot of people take a lot of pride in within the industry, a lot of wrestlers are very into gear and will have several different variations on their gear. I'm sure you see a lot of different styles and so forth on the shows you're involved in. What's some of the best looking gear that you've seen on shows recently?
Oh, wow. My favorite gear that I've seen recently, and I'm kind of upset that he doesn't wear it anymore, is the one Jeffrey Bravo. He used to have this outfit that would light up, kind of like Chris Jericho on a smaller budget, but it's not something you see on the indies a lot, and I really liked that. And but then he stopped wearing it, so what can you do?
Stop booking him, supposedly. Now, for people that might be in the industry right now that are listening, if someone came to you for advice on where to go to have gear made, who would you say would be some of your top picks to go to have gear professionally made right now?
Well, I've only had professional gear made by one person. That was the Exotic Adrian Street, the Bizarre Bazaar. I got a few singlets from him over the years, and they lasted all this time. You know, he does good work.
That he does, definitely. Now, the young people listening today are thinking of getting into the wrestling business, and they're not yet in the business right now. What's some of the advice you would give someone thinking about getting into our industry?
Don't do it.
That's usually what I say.
But they're not going to listen anyway, because I certainly didn't listen. But go to a good wrestling school, get properly trained, and yeah, put everything into it, because you're going to get out of wrestling what you put into it. And if I would have put in more, I would have gotten more out of it. But I'm happy with what I've done.
Now, when you're looking to book someone at UWC, I'm sure you get a lot of people that send messages and inquire how to get on with them. What are you personally looking for when trying to select new talent?
Well, what I usually go by, I take the advice of people who are already on the roster. But when somebody sends me, they send me a YouTube link, you know, check, take a look at my work, I take a look. And you know, the main thing I want to see is if they're competent in the ring, if they're not, you know, if they're not going to hurt anybody, first and foremost. And check how they get over with the crowd. I always look for a crowd reaction. That's very important.
Something a lot of younger wrestlers don't really take into account is the crowd reaction. A lot of wrestlers go out there and they're trying to do the most athletically impressive thing they can do, regardless if it is what the fans are into or not, and they aren't always going based on the fans. I see a lot today on the independent circuit. Is that something that you see on the independent level in your area a lot, or is it a little bit different where you are?
Well, what I see, I think it's a generational thing, that because like a lot of the younger wrestlers are more into working the match as opposed to working the crowd, where they're not gauging the crowd's reaction and trying to feed off of it as much as we did back in the day. And I think it's just the way a lot of them are trained these days. It's more the modern style is, you know, it's hitting the moves, hitting big moves instead of just working with the crowd.
I agree with that.
I don't know if you heard that. My cat just let out a big meow and ran off.
Another aspect in wrestling that gets a lot of attention is the diet in wrestling, that's always been sort of a factor in the sport. Do you get a lot of people coming to you for advice as far as the diet and the training regimen that they should incorporate?
Yeah, if someone's coming to me for diet advice, they are coming to the wrong person. That goes along with what I said earlier about putting into wrestling, getting out of wrestling what you put into it. And the dieting, you know, I didn't put that in as well as I should have. And I could have gotten farther if I had taken better care of myself. But, you know, that's the way it goes. But that's important, especially in this, in the current climate. Back in the 90s, you had more variety with body types. Yeah, you know, heavier wrestlers could, you know, go out there and, you know, still get work. But not as much today. Today, you know, you need a physique. Like, even back then, like really, really skinny wrestlers could get work. Not as much today.
Now, obviously, to put on a show, you need wrestlers, but there's also a lot of other jobs in the industry that go into making a show successful. You have ring announcers, you have referees, you have timekeepers, security, the people that put up the ring. Do you as a booker have a guideline as far as what you're looking for out of the auxiliary roles within professional wrestling?
Well, right now, I have what I would consider one of the best referees around in this area, George Panaha. He's been a ref for over 30 years, and he's been in there with legends. And that's the main thing I look for. I try to get the best that you possibly can with for a ref, for a ring announcer. Because these are roles that a lot of people, they're not like the most important thing you need on a show. But in a way, they are the most important thing because it enhances everything. It makes everything else look good. You can have the best wrestlers, but if you have a lousy ring announcer, if you have a lousy referee, if you have a sound person who screws everything up, it's going to mess the show up.
Agreed. Now, you mentioned a great referee there, but you, I'm sure, have been on shows with a very wide range of referees, good, great, bad. Now, who are some of the referees you've been in there with that you consider some of the greatest out there?
Definitely Mike Keener and Jim Mulino from ECW. They've refed a few of my matches over the years, and just the fact that they were in ECW just tells you all you need to know. There were a lot of great referees over the years around here. There's some really bad ones that were out just to get them, trying to get themselves over, but those are the main ones. Bill Alfonso, I had the pleasure of having him as a referee once while I was in training. It was a practice match, and it was just really cool to have him in the ring with me.
At this point in time, my co-host QT is standing by, and I'm sure that he has questions as well, so I'm going to pass things over to QT.
All right, QT.
Well, Sunday, I am going to pull off at mile marker 88 here. It's going to take another minute. I got to pull off because I don't want to be caught talking on a cell phone while driving. Give me 1 minute, and I am now pulling off on 88. Yes.
All right, we don't want you arrested.
I hear that.
Well, Joe, speaking of QT's trip there, I'm sure you've done a lot of trips in your day for wrestling. What was the longest road trip that you took?
longest road trip was up to Halton, Maine. I was in a car with Nunzio, Gino Caruso, and Dave Desire. 12-hour drive. I wrestled Coco Beware for about a... He squashed me in a minute. I think I got $50, and we came right back home.
I can definitely see that happening, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, QQ, it's been a minute. Are you prepared?
What's that?
QT, are you prepared yet?
I need 30 more seconds. I see an open field where I'm about to pull off. Yes, 30 more seconds.
All right. Well, Joe, speaking of open fields, this time of year we see an abundance of outdoor shows in our neck of the woods, the Pacific Northwest. I'm sure you've done outdoor shows in your career. Did you enjoy wrestling outdoors as opposed to the traditional indoor venue?
Most of the times I hated wrestling outdoors, especially when it was really hot. I did one outdoor show, it was 90 degrees, and let me tell you what, that match didn't last very long.
How many holds were you in extended in that match?
Oh, God. There weren't a lot of high spots, I can tell you that.
All right, QT, are you prepared now?
Yes, I am. And for our logbook, the Turnbuckle Turmoil logbook, I am parked off exit 88, and I'm in a parking lot with a store called Marijuana Mart.
Yeah. There you go.
It's very important, Sinai, that you log this in our logbook. Okay. Yes. All right. Well, hi, Joe. Joe, Sinai talked about the comedy aspect in wrestling. How did you like Andy Kaufman?
I love Andy Kaufman. I absolutely love Andy Kaufman. He is probably one of the greatest performers ever. He understands how to be a heel more than, I would say, 90% of the people in the wrestling business now and then. He's just truly amazing, and I absolutely loved his feud with Jerry Lawler.
Yes, now Jerry Lawler and Andy Kaufman were on the Tonight Show with David Letterman when the infamous slap happened. That was a slap heard around the world.
Absolutely.
Yes. Oh, okay. Well, now can you tell us about some of the more significant injuries that you have occurred and overcome?
Well, the good news is I haven't had many really serious injuries. One of them is like the stupidest injury like you could possibly have. Well, I did. I lose the match. I roll out of the ring, and I try to bang my hand on the ring apron in frustration. Well, I banged my hand so hard I broke my pinky.
Oh.
So that was one, like, really dumb injury. But the other time, more recently, like, towards the end of, while things were winding down in my wrestling days, I think I cracked a rib in a match. I'm not sure. I didn't go to a doctor or anything, but... it hurt really bad any time I laughed, and the best part was I was supposed to go to a comedy club after the show, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to spend the night laughing and then writhing in pain.
Wow. Now, did this cracked rib give you more appreciation when you watched the professional boxers in the past, like Joe Frazier when he went to the body of Ali, or maybe... Ernie Shavers that stood 15 rounds with Ali and peppered his body with shots, or maybe George Foreman?
Well, I don't watch a whole lot of boxing, but I can only imagine what that felt like, because that rib injury, like, it hurt a lot. Like, it hurt to breathe at that point. So if they're able to go that long with taking those kind of punches, more power to them.
Wow, all right, okay. Well, when you were growing up in like junior high or high school, did you have a wrestling background yourself? Did you turn out for the wrestling team?
No, unfortunately, I never went out for the wrestling team. I wasn't big into sports. Pro wrestling was really the only thing I was into.
Oh, okay. So you didn't go out for track and field or cross country?
No. And I regret never going out for wrestling.
Oh, okay. All right. But I think I heard you say to Sign Guy that you did have some backyard wrestling matches.
I did. I had a backyard, little backyard wrestling promotion with my friends. We used to videotape it and we did all stupid stuff, but we had fun. We didn't know what we were doing, but we were having a good time doing it.
Now, you didn't jump off the roof into some bed mattresses, did you? Jump off a roof?
No,
oh,
we did
good.
Not. We did not pull a Cactus Jack.
Oh, okay. Now,
I did take one
you?
Of the stiffest chair shots ever in the backyard.
Oh, can you tell us about who delivered this shot to you?
No, that would be Rick Silver, who actually also broke into pro wrestling with me, and we were tag partners. We were we feuded for pretty much the entire time we were in the business. But I basically told him, okay, when I have the God of War and the Camel Clutch here, hit me with the steel chair as hard as you can, and he did exactly that.
Wow.
And
it
didn't feel so good.
Did it draw any blood?
It did not.
Oh, okay.
Fortunately. And knowing what I know today about concussions and whatnot, I would, you know, if I could do it over again, I would say absolutely not. Because I'm sure I at least got a slight concussion from that.
Now, did you have any brothers and sisters that you challenged in the backyard?
No, I don't have any brothers, and my sisters are all older than me, so they wouldn't have been involved in that.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Joe, I saw your YouTube video called Joe Rules, the Greatest Professional Wrestler of All Time, and in this video, it showed some of your highlight moves, especially when you were wrestling for an organization called ECPW.
Yes, East Coast Pro Wrestling.
Oh, okay. That's East Coast Pro. All right. Okay. I was intrigued by the soundtrack to this video, which was Hot, Sweet, and Sticky. Do you know what 70s band sang this? This is kind of like a trivia question.
I could not tell you off the top of my head.
Oh, okay. It was Montrose with singer Sammy Hagar.
Okay.
Okay, well, you said at the end of the video that Joe Rules did not have to raise his voice or scream and yell to get his point across. You said...
Yeah, that's very nice and quietly.
Yes, you said Joe Rules is not just a name, it's a fact. I thought that was pretty neat. Yes. Wow, okay. All right. Yes, it was Montrose and with Sammy Hagar, who later went on to Van Halen.
Yes. And more trivia. I actually used Van Halen as my entrance music, not the Sammy Hagar version, but 1984 from the album of the same name.
Well, now you can usually tell what a character a wrestler will be by the bands that he has seen in concert. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners what the five best concerts you've ever been to, in your opinion?
Let's see. I actually haven't been to a lot of concerts, to tell you the truth. But,
oh, okay.
I got to say, I got to see Johnny Cash in concert when I was very, very young. Like, I was probably too young to appreciate it, but it's still really cool to be able to say that I saw Johnny Cash in concert.
Wow. Okay. All right. Is it safe to say that Folsom Prison Blues is one of your favorite country songs?
Oh, absolutely. When I was a little kid, I used to sing that all the time. That was one of the few songs that I knew all the words to. And somewhere I have on a cassette a recording of me singing the Folsom Prison Blues.
Oh, all right.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm 5 years old singing.
Well, now you may have been in high school, perhaps when the Smashing Pumpkins came into prominence. What do you think about Billy Corgan as a wrestling promoter up north? Billy Corgan.
Hard to say. You know, from what I understand, he just purchased the rights to the NWA name. So I'd be interested to wait and see what he's going to do with it.
Wow. Now, would it be one of your goals to meet Billy Corgan at the Cauliflower Alley Club? That would be a highlight.
Actually, I've been meaning to join the Cauliflower Alley Club since I've been a fan. And, I've never had the right combination of money or, you know, whatnot to join. But I'm actually planning on joining it very soon.
Wow, all right, okay. Now, would one of the top five wrestlers you have never met, did you ever get a chance to meet George the Animal Steel?
I actually wrestled George the Animal Steel.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah, I had a match with him, I think it was in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, and I also managed against him a few times. I managed Mr. Ooh-La-La when he fought George the Animal Steel.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And Steel was managed by Captain Lou on the show as well. Captain Lou was one of the main reasons that I got interested in wrestling in the first place. You know, they have the old saying, you know, you should never meet your heroes, but I got to meet my hero and I got to work with my hero, and it was well worth it.
Wow. Now, speaking of heroes, did you ever have a chance to wrestle on many bases, like Army bases or Air Force bases?
Worked a few National Guard armories, and what was really cool is we had a show on an actual battleship, the Battleship New Jersey, which it's in Camden. Camden, New Jersey, over here, and it's actually the most decorated battleship in naval history.
Wow. Yeah, well, you know, I went on the Battleship New Jersey in Bremerton when I was 9 years old in 1969, and my uncle was serving on there as an administration officer.
Wow.
Yes. Oh, okay. Yes, I know the New Jersey very well. I have trod its decks. Oh, okay. All right, well, Joe, I also saw your YouTube video entitled Pennywise with Countess Noor versus Joe Rules with Luxus Lynn, December 1997.
All right, first, that's Luxurious Lynn. She will yell at you if you get it wrong.
Luxurious Lynn, yes. All right. Well, you were wearing a Christmas hat, and Lynn was wearing a poinsettia red dress, and she also had Christmas tree tinsel decoration. You two, along with Johnny Rodeo, were obviously in the Christmas spirit, but Pennywise and Luxurious Lynn were not. My question
is... You mean Countess Noor, I believe.
Oh, Countess Noor, yes. Oh, okay. Now, my question is, was Pennywise a distant cousin of Suicide from TNA Impact Wrestling?
It's possible, but I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Wow. They kind of bore a resemblance. Okay. All right. Well, Joe, Pennywise and Luxurious Lynn came to the ring with the entrance music of Beautiful People by Marilyn Manson.
No, Luxurious Lynn came out with me. Pennywise came out with Countess Noor.
Oh, Countess Noor. Okay. I didn't have my cup
of... You keep getting it wrong.
Yes, my coffee had not kicked in by that time this morning. Okay. Now, Marilyn Manson was well known for his goth look because of his straight black hair, black fingernails, and black trench coats, along with his black spray-painted army boots. And Countess Knorr was looking somewhat like Morticia Adams from the Adams Family. My question is, did Pennywise and Countess Knorr invite you to Denny's after the match to drink coffee and read works from Edgar Allan Poe like all good goth people do?
I'm afraid they did not. Although I am both a big fan of coffee and Edgar Allan Poe, and I don't mind the occasional stop at Denny's.
Oh, okay. Now, did you belong to a goth movement in high school yourself?
Oh, hell no.
Oh, okay.
I'm as non-gothic as you're going to get.
Oh, okay. Now, was Johnny Rodeo in a good Christmas mood?
Possibly. His name is actually pronounced Johnny Rodeo. I think the announcers got it wrong, too, though.
Oh, okay. Well, he did carry a street sign that said Rodeo to the ring, but I suspect, that he may have got that from Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills, because it looked like Johnny had on a very expensive Louis Vuitton silk shirt and the finest Dockers that money can buy. Is Mr. Rodeo indeed from Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills? And if so, does he hang out with Will Ferrell and Tina Fey?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Where else is he going to be from?
Wow, all right, okay. Well, Joe, as a three-time United Wrestling Coalition title holder, and holder of the JWA Wrestling Alliance World title and JWA United Wrestling World title, you should be given a working microphone when you make your entrance into the ring and not have it malfunction when the announcer hands it to you. Were you impressed by the way the microphones were lowered from the ceilings and always seemed to work when Mr. Kennedy from Green Bay, Wisconsin, entered the ring?
That was always entertaining. I always liked the old microphone that would come down from the ceiling. It was a throwback to the old Madison Square Garden shows.
Well, with all those titles that you held, you would think that an announcer would hand you a microphone that worked.
Yeah, well, yes. Good luck with that.
Now, here's
the
question.
If the microphone doesn't work, I'll just talk loud. I got a big mouth, and I can take care of it.
Oh, okay. Wow. Oh, all right. Okay. Now, would your mom agree with that assessment that you have a big mouth?
Say that again?
Your mother. Would your mother agree with the assessment that you have a slightly big mouth?
I'm sure she would have. She's no longer with us, but I think she would agree with that.
Wow, all right, okay. Well, Joe, you defeated a wrestler known as Section 8 for the UWC North American title in a boot camp match.
Yes.
Can you tell our listeners what a boot camp match is?
Well, a boot camp match is essentially no DQ, no countouts, anything goes. It was made famous by Sergeant Slaughter and the Iron Sheik back in 1984-85. And with Section 8 being a military type, it was his kind of match. And But we had a plan. I was out there with Patricia M. Steinman and Luxurious Lynn. Luxurious Lynn was in charge of getting the weapons for the match. We needed weapons to fight Section 8. Unfortunately, she got her weapons at Toys R Us. She bought Nerf darts,
Nerf guns, and it didn't really have the same effect that we wanted.
Oh. Now, did you dock the pay of Luxurious Lynn for getting these weapons that weren't really weapons?
All right, let me explain something here. You don't dock the pay of Luxurious Lynn.
Oh, okay. Wow, all right.
Just trust me on that.
Oh, all right. Okay, very good. Okay. Well, Joe, we had on a wrestler named Timmy Lou Retton a few months back, and he was named Pro Wrestling Illustrated number 500 wrestler for 2016. Have you ever met the wrestler known as Timmy Lou Retton?
No, I have not had the pleasure. I actually have wrestled a few former number 500s, though. I wrestled Donnie Allen, who was number 500, I think, 2 years before I was. A lot of fans will remember him. He was on ECW quite a lot back in the day. And I also had the opportunity to work with Kurt Adonis, also known as Purdy Curdy. He hadn't become number 500 yet. He got the spot a couple of years after we wrestled.
Well, did you ever meet in the ring 2015 ranked number 500 BWI wrestler, the Space Monkey? The Space Monkey.
The Space Monkey.
Yeah.
No, I'm afraid I have not.
Oh, okay. Well, he was number 500 in 2015, Space Monkey. All right. Well, Joe, I also saw your YouTube video entitled Reckless Youth Returns to Wrestling. In this video, you inform a wrestler named Biggie Biggs that a former two-time UWC heavyweight champion, that if Biggie were to have you as his manager, you could take him to the championship again. My question is, who did you beat to get these two UWC championships?
Who did I beat for the UWC championship?
Yes.
I'm a one-time UWC heavyweight champion. I won that. I actually won it in a six-man tag team match, which is kind of a long story. But basically, I'll give you the Reader's Digest version here. I was the commissioner at the time, and the heavyweight championship was vacant. I was in a six-man tag. I got the pinfall in the six-man tag. So after the match was over, I announced that the whoever got the pinfall in that match would be the heavyweight champion. And therefore, since it was me, I was the champion. But immediately after that, they fired me as commissioner for God knows why. They sent out Mike Grimaldi as the new commissioner, and he stripped me of the title, and I was not happy about that, and I still hold a grudge about it to this day.
Wow. Okay. Well, you have an impressive lineage and titles in the UWC, but it didn't seem like Biggie was really listening to you when you told him that you can take him to the championship again, because he said, and I quote, that he was going to be a lone wolf in his quest for the UWC title. Well, Joe, did you ever see John Cusack and Dan Aykroyd in the movie Gross Point Blank?
I'm afraid I did not.
Oh, okay. Well, that kind of spoils my next question.
Sorry to ruin it for you.
because John Cusack was an assassin along with Dan Aykroyd, but Dan Aykroyd was trying to get to join his team of assassins, and John Cusack said, "Look at these clothes and my attitude. I want to go lone wolf. If you join other people in this business, bad things happen." That's what he said.
Biggie Biggs should have totally joined forces with me.
Yes. Oh, okay. Well, all right. Well, now, was it nice that Reckless Youth, he offered his services as a trainer? To your knowledge, did he train Reckless Youth? Did he train WWE superstar Scotty Too Hotty?
I do not know.
Oh. Okay. Does Reckless Youth still have his Bentley?
Oh, of course he does.
The Bentley that he drove to the match. Oh, okay.
Yes, absolutely.
That's wow, all right. Oh, okay.
And let me say this about Reckless Youth. He is one of the finest wrestlers that I have ever had the pleasure of being in the ring with. Most of the time we're on the same side, but I did get the opportunity to wrestle him once.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. How many times did you come out victorious against him?
I actually, believe it or not, I defeated him in that match.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I felt guilty about it ever since.
Well, I do hope that you get a chance in the next couple of days to watch on YouTube a couple of clips of Gross Point Blank with John Cusack and Dan Aykroyd, especially when they meet for breakfast. Their dialogue is one of my favorite in cinematic history.
I will have to check it out.
And listen to when John Cusack says that he would like to remain a lone wolf. It reminded me of kind of like your wrestling match. Yes. And then Biggie Biggs saying that he wanted to remain a lone wolf. That's what I'm getting at.
Right.
Yes. All right. Well, it was good talking with you. I am now pulling out of the Marijuana Mart parking lot and zooming south. Back to you, Sunday. Yes.
Thank you, QT. Well, Joe, we know that most of your time spent right now is with the UWC. For the fans listening that aren't familiar with the promotion, could you give us kind of a rundown on what the fans can expect out of a UWC show?
UWC show is a very family-orientated event. It's we get a lot of small children there, younger kids. It's something that, parents, don't have to be worried about taking the kids to see. You know, there's, no one's going to get on the house mic and, start cursing. If there's blood, the match is going to be stopped. There's a, no tolerance policy for use of weapons. But that doesn't mean that there's no action. There's plenty of action. We have a lot of great wrestlers. We have, for example, the heavyweight champion, Andy Vivian. He's going to be taking on the United States champion this Saturday, Jimmy Pipes. We have the fraternity taking on the Sons of Liberty this Saturday. That's for the tag team championship. And we have the big Wrightstown Rumble. It's similar to the Royal Rumble, where it's a battle royal where the wrestlers come out one by one. The twist is that the winner gets a title shot at any champion in the UWC at any time.
Well, we have just a few minutes of airtime left on the show today, so I want to give that time to you. If there's anything you'd like to say to the listeners, plug and promote everything you have, your social medias, your merchandise, upcoming shows, your favorite dry cleaner, anything in the world you'd like, floor is all yours.
All right. Well, I was just telling you about the Wrightstown Rumble coming up next week. That's going to be at Kelly's Banquet Hall in Wrightstown, New Jersey. That's something you don't want to miss. You can follow me on Twitter at UWC Rules. That's UWCRULES. You can find me on Facebook. I believe it's I think the address is Real Joe Rules. Let me just take a look real quick. But while I'm looking for that, I can tell you that you can also find the United Wrestling Coalition on Facebook at facebook.com/UWCFanCave. And you can find me on Facebook at, yes, it's facebook.com/RealJoeRules. I think that's everything. So I'm going to take this time to talk about my cat. My cat is named
By all means.
Adorable Russian Blue. And I love him very much, and he's being adorable right now, and now he's biting me.
Are you giving him a five count to break the bite?
Sorry, stop fighting.
Well, Joe,
and
I want to thank you. Well, you give him a five. A third or fourth time, I would, you know, threaten disqualification.
Yeah, he eventually gets mad when I'm on the phone because he wants attention.
Understandable. Well, Joe, it's been a great pleasure having you on the show today. Appreciate taking time to talk to us here on Turnbuckle Turmoil today. We would love to have you back, and best of luck next week there at the UWC and all of your upcoming shows.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Fans, if you're in the vicinity, go check out UWC. If you're unfamiliar with Joe Rules, check him out. Lots on YouTube available. Check out his website. Great, great stuff. And we will talk to you next week.